Breeze 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holling. We have another great show for you, a very provocative and probably passionate show for you this morning. We're going to tackle North Carolina's recently signed voter ID law. Governor Pat McCrory quietly signed into law what I and others feel amounts to a new poll tax, making North Carolina one of the first states in the country to require a photo ID before casting a ballot. Make no mistake, this law will impose a burden on a host of voting groups in North Carolina, most notably African Americans, the elderly, and college students. And as I and others suspect, the measure is designed to hamper the ability for Democrats to win on national, state, and local levels. So we're talking voter ID here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland.
In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting.
Community Voices with Ron Holland.
Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart.
Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7.
Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Hi, I'm Governor Pat McCrory. The integrity of our election process is vital to our democracy, which is why I've signed today several common sense reforms into law, including voter ID. Photo ID has become a part of our everyday life. You need a photo ID to board an airplane, to cash a check, or even apply for most government benefits. In fact, just recently, both Democrats and Republicans joined together to require a valid government-issued photo ID to buy Sudafed at your local corner drugstore. Our right to vote deserves similar protection. In fact, for voters who may not even have a photo ID, they can get one at no charge at a nearby DMV office throughout the state. To ensure everyone has enough time, photo ID won't be required until the 2016 elections. Let me be direct. Many of those from the extreme left who have been criticizing photo ID are using scare tactics. They're more interested in divisive politics than ensuring that no one's vote is disenfranchised by a fraudulent ballot. Protecting the integrity of every vote cast is among the most important duties I have as governor, and it's why I signed these common sense, commonplace protections into law. Thank you very much.
And of course, that was Governor Pat McCrory giving his perspective and rationale behind signing into law the new voter ID law that is going to impact North Carolina voters in 2016. And I will venture to guess that it is going to impact North Carolina voters prior to the next presidential election, particularly as folks gear up and prepare themselves to adhere to the new law written on the books in North Carolina. It is absolutely amazing. It is stunning. Next week, we'll mark the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. And it is during that moment in America's troubled history of race and segregation and, of course, the fundamental question of human dignity that a profound question emerged from the darkness of bigotry and violence toward African Americans. That question is, will racial prejudice and skin color continue to be the defining characteristic of our democracy? Despite all the gains that were made in the 50 years since Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, despite our collective ability to impact consumer markets with a buying power of billions, I mean, $700, $800, $900 billion a year, rivaling small industrialized nations, despite a weighty presence in all levels of government, including having an African-American president and a black family in the White House. Despite our intellectual heft, our political savvy, our business acumen that earned the smartest and brightest among us access to the higher echelons of corporate America,
there are vestiges of prejudice that have been obscured by our social, economic, and political achievements. We've come a long way, but in those achievements, in those gains, there has been a sense of complacency. We've been lulled to sleep in many ways because what we are seeing in essence, we are slowly seeing the gains we've made diminish in significant ways, especially as it relates to our right to vote. We can see that economically. We can see it in health care. We can see it in all areas that govern our lives. But it is so pronounced in our voting rights that it requires us, it warrants a real closer look, a real scrutiny of how these things are unfolding right before our very eyes. And as I've indicated, McCrory quietly signed into law that new voter ID law, which, of course, will require all North Carolina residents to present a photo ID prior to casting their ballot. Trust has gone out the window. Residency has gone out the window. Full participation in our democracy is now being questioned. There was no fanfare. There was no celebration when he signed this new voter ID law. There was no pomp and circumstance to mark the occasion. It was a simple signing into law, a measure that literally daggers the heart of everyone, living or dead, who fought for our rights to vote. Put a knife in our heart. All the gains that we've made, the hard work, the lynchings, the dyings, the murder that took place during the civil rights movement, all those individuals who sacrificed their lives for the very right to participate, fully participate in our democracy. A knife was stabbed right in their heart. And you might suggest, Ron, you are exaggerating. You are engaging in rhetorical hyperbole. No, I'm not. People have died for the single most important instrument of our democracy. A right to vote. A right to cast a ballot unhindered, unafraid, and with the full confidence that your voice and vote demonstrates a firm willingness to play an integral role in our democratic society. And I want to underscore, I want to emphasize this point. I'm going to be redundant in this area. People sacrificed their lives. And I know there are individuals in our society, particularly the fringed right, the ultra right wing conservatives, who believe for whatever reason that implementing this kind of law doesn't infringe on our rights and it doesn't cast a dark shadow over all the gains that we've made. I know they believe that. I know that in their hearts, they believe that we are engaging in some type of rhetorical hyperbole. But I am telling you, when you consider the fact that people were lynched over this issue, people died over this particular issue, I want to emphasize, we have a right to be outraged about this. This isn't hyperbole. In 2013, we are grappling with an unpleasant and, quite frankly, a frightening reality that there exist many people in our country that don't see anything terribly wrong with suppressing our vote. Requiring a photo ID is atrocious enough. And I'll get to the burdensome part of the law as we delve into that. It, in my judgment, has little merit in the context of voter fraud. The new law signed by Governor McCrory restricts early voting. There is absolutely nothing more fundamental to our democracy than to provide full and unimpeded access to the ballot box. Let's look at the benefits of early voting. We, of course, avoid the long lines that are usually associated with a presidential election. And we've seen in 2000, during the last presidential election, folks wrapped around the building, long lines, which can be an impediment, particularly if you're trying to avoid missing work or missing school. And of course, if an emergency situation were to arise on the official election day, what happens with early voting is that you avoid having to miss work or miss school. you can cast your ballot to avoid that situation, thus giving you an opportunity to fully participate in our democracy. The new law halts same-day registration. Now, you can argue the pitfalls of same-day registration, and certainly I freely admit that if fraud is going to rear its ugly head, it would be in that area. This area is particularly fraught with some issues. I freely admit that. But we can work around those issues. We don't restrict it. We don't halt it. We don't stop it. We work around those issues. And again, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. When the laws were passed in 8 states around the country, Maine, Iowa, Idaho, I believe Minnesota was one of those states, and a host of others, what mitigated potential for abuse was a valid ID. And the parameters were set to determine what that valid ID entailed. So there are workarounds to abuse and to fraud. But we have to consider the fact that there is a motive behind what we're seeing here. And again, we're talking about giving every single adult American an opportunity to fully participate in their democracy. And so when you employ these kinds of restrictions, you pull away that participation. The new law restricts extending voting hours, and college students cannot use school-issued photo ID. I don't know if you are offended by that, but I am. And why I find McCrory and his ilk so offensive on this issue is because one could argue the merits of presenting a photo ID upon casting a ballot. We can do that. We can certainly argue the validity of it. We certainly want to prevent fraud. But what is so cynical about the law are the particular measures that are attached. Again, restricting extending hours, halting same-day registration. These are issues that are attached to this new law. In reality, extending voting hours is a way to address the panoply of issues that arises during elections. Long lines, as I've indicated. And you remember the footage. Again, those voters wrapped around those buildings, particularly in Florida, because, you know, during the last presidential election, Florida was almost the last holdout in terms of deciding the election because there were long lines. And as it happens, during nearly all elections, there are problems with machines. There are a number of irregularities with respect to absentee ballots. And quite frankly, voter intimidation and harassment occurs during elections, requiring attorneys to sort out a host of convoluted rules. So extending voting hours addressed many of these issues. So the question becomes, why was this stripped away in the new law? Why tinker around with something that is so obvious to our democracy, extending voting hours, that will give folks an opportunity to fully engage the process? Why halt same-day registration? You can argue presenting a photo ID prior to casting a ballot, but halting same-day registration, stopping or restricting, extending the hours for folks to have an opportunity to engage the process, there is something cynical about this. And if you don't think this is about race, if you don't think this is about control, you are fooling yourself. This is about using absolutely every dirty trick in the book to win. That is the bottom line. And you all ought to be offended by this. You ought to be outraged that there are individuals who are looking to stymie other people's right to vote, stymie their franchise. You ought to be outraged by this. I'm offended by this. Now, many of you remember Ronald Reagan's campaign manager, Lee Atwater. Those of you who are students of history will certainly recognize that name. And you remember his Southern strategy. It was all about race. It was always about race, particularly as African-Americans began to fully engage the process and to exercise their franchise in a more muscular way. So what was the Southern strategy about? It was about using race. It was about literally using code words. You know, that is the bottom line. How do you engage those bigots in the party? How do you get them excited about voting? What could you do to turn them on to make sure that they turn out in greater numbers to repel the efforts of African Americans and Hispanics? You use the Southern strategy. You use race. Well, the 21st century version of that racist ballot busting voter disenfranchising strategy has snaked its way into our political system in a more sophisticated way. The language, the racial overtones are slightly more sophisticated. Atwater, during his time, warned that openly and overtly using the N-word, for instance, in a political campaign, especially on the stump and during political speeches, would literally engender backlash and public outcry because you are exposed as being a bigot. And so that would engender a real sense of outrage and encourage folks to come out to vote. So instead, his method was to use a more shrewd approach, expressing yourself in a more obscure way, expressing and obscuring prejudice by changing the language of your political message and dialogue. So instead of using the N-word, they would use abstract arguments and code words and buzz phrases like forced busing and states' rights. And it appeared innocuous when you say those words, but underneath that is a deep-seated prejudice. Because why would I want my white kid going to a school with black kids? Forced busing. States' rights. The state has a right to oversee. And the state, you know, because if you remember, states' rights is one of those issues related to slavery. The state should be able to decide. That's why there was such an argument, a robust argument about states' rights and how the federal government would infringe upon states' rights. Well, you needed the federal government, particularly as the civil rights movement began to unfold. It was the power and the weight of the federal government that gave us the right to vote. And there were individuals, particularly those Southern strategists, who saw an infringement upon their rights to decide elections. And so they would employ all kinds of tricks to make sure that African Americans wouldn't vote. That's why you needed the federal government to oversee the process. And so what Lee Atwater did in terms of implementing and employing the Southern strategy is similar to what Republican pollster Frank Luntz advises GOP candidates and right-wing media outlets. Change the words. Don't use the N-word. Use abstract language like force busing. That's the tenor of the argument here. So when you couch your language in obscure and abstract phrasing, it allows you to express your prejudice without seeming prejudiced. And it gives you the ability to legislatively deconstruct the gains, i.e. civil rights and voting rights, affirmative action, without seeming to be exercising racial prejudice. That is what is happening here. There is a grand strategy taking place. And that strategy entails getting back the White House, controlling the Senate, controlling the Congress, controlling the entire House. That's what we're seeing. We've seen that with the Supreme Court. Republican legislators all around the country gerrymandering districts to ensure Republican control. Voter ID laws being promoted in states controlled by Republican governors. This has national implications. This goes way beyond Charlotte. Why do you think union busting in states like Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan gained national prominence and national traction? Why do you think governors like Scott Walker gained national prominence, especially among Republicans? Because when you weaken the unions and simultaneously implement voter suppression, you effectively weaken a vast swath of the voting public, i.e. African Americans, Hispanics, poor whites, and the working poor. This is about taking control of the House, the Senate, and the White House. That's what this is about. Weaken the union's ability to fundraise and organize, and you stymie the chances of a Democratic win. You impose restrictive voting and you suppress voter turnout. That's how you win. This, my friends, is a strategy, a long thought out, pondered, considered strategy. Now, I want you to consider this, because when you think about what the Supreme Court did in early summer, when it struck down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, this was a boon for Republicans all across the country, especially in states where Republican governors and state legislators are in control. And let's be clear. The provision of the landmark civil rights law, Section 4, required states to clear their voting laws through the federal government or in federal court. Why? Because the 1964 Voting Rights Act paved the way for African Americans and other so-called minorities to fully participate in our democracy. And it stripped the bigots in state government from employing all types of tricks to restrict the right to vote for African Americans. That is what is happening. We get this landmark law, and 50 years later, we are in a situation where it is curtailed to the point where now there is absolutely no clearance. Before, there had to be pre-clearance because they were employing all kinds of tricks to prevent people from voting. You remember, for instance, the literacy test, a whole bevy of stuff that they were using. So if you're not outraged by these tricks, there is something fundamentally wrong with your heart and your thinking. I remember back in 2010 when the Iraqis were casting their ballots in a parliamentary election and how they would dip their finger in purple ink to indicate their participation in an election that would essentially decide who would lead them through the malaise of their war-torn country and their economic doldrums. Republicans on camera celebrated the birth of democracy in Iraq, but were devising schemes to kill the democratic process for African Americans and Hispanics in this country. Yeah, President Obama made such a huge impact on this country and around the world, but somewhere in a smoke-filled room, there were people devising tricks to stymie the black vote. When Nelson Mandela ran for president in South Africa during the late 90s, Republicans on camera celebrated those long lines in Soweto, but we're working on revising the Southern strategy during the Clinton years. These folks have absolutely no shame, no shame at all. So when they speak about Syria and Bashar's oppression, when they deride President Obama's actions in Egypt, when they sound the clarion call for democracy abroad, they speak with forked tongues, and their actions on voter ID bear witness to their hypocrisy. That is the bottom line. Now, I know they will argue that there is nothing inherently wrong with requiring Americans to present a photo ID. They argue that before boarding a plane or driving a car, proper ID is required. But I will argue that our Constitution protects and guarantees our right to vote, and there should be no hindrances that obstruct that constitutionally guaranteed right. Flying on a plane or driving a car is a privilege. Those privileges' impact on our democracy doesn't measure with the intent and spirit of our voting rights. One has nothing to do with the other. It's a false equivalency. Cashing a check, as McCrory would suggest, or buying drugs isn't constitutionally guaranteed. But written in our laws that govern our democracy is the right to full participation of said democracy. And the instrument of that guarantee is our right to vote. That is the bottom line. So when the Supreme Court issued its ruling in early summer, it signaled a free fall for every Republican governor and legislator to do whatever it takes to curtail the franchise of certain Americans, namely African Americans and poor whites and the elderly and college students. That is amazing to me. As I close, I just want to emphasize the reason that I'm so sensitive and others are so outraged by this. And as we mark the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, I want you to consider this fact. We have a long way to go in this country with regard to race and race relations. There is a cynical ploy to divide our country. Some might argue Again, the merits of voter ID, I will argue the opposite. I believe in my heart that there is an intentional effort to curtail our vote simply because folks want power. We ought not allow voting to become an arduous task for anybody in this country. For the elderly and those without state-issued photo ID and college students who will have to take extra measures to get a state-issued ID, this is an extra layer of effort that ought not be in place. For me, without tangible evidence of widespread voter fraud, these measures are unjustified. It is a 21st century poll tax that's designed to suppress the black and Hispanic vote. That, of course, is my perspective. McCrory and proponents of this law have yet to demonstrate any widespread voter fraud, and they will sign into the law. They will sign into law this nonsensical effort simply because they want to take control. And we now have the distinction of being among the first in the country to implement such a law, which is absolutely amazing. It seems to me, folks, and so many others that are paying close attention to these issues, that we are in many ways sliding backwards. Yes, we've made tremendous gains in this country, no doubt. But we are slowly seeing those gains we've made diminish in significant ways, especially as it relates to the right to vote. And I can talk all day about the rise in police brutality cases around the country. I can spend a significant amount of time addressing the education and economic and wealth gap that still persists. Not to mention the awful reality that poor people are getting the short shrift in health needs, hunger, criminal justice, job discrimination. Yes, job discrimination still exists. There are so many areas that warrant our attention that it would literally make you question how far we've really come. Yes, we have the big houses and the nice cars and we live in secluded communities and, you know, gains were made. We are in a far better place than we were 50 years ago. But when you consider what our elected officials are pushing through legislative bodies all across the country, there is a drastic reversal in the sentiment of equality and is eroding precipitously. And I think it is quite stunning that this is taking place. Voter intimidation, tricks at the polls, laws specifically designed to suppress the black vote. How far have we really come? I firmly and strongly believe that we've been lulled into complacency. So many of us have achieved what is considered the American dream, house, nice neighborhood, all of those things I just named, that we've fallen asleep at the guard post that protects our rights and our gains. I think those black and white film footage of the civil rights movement has given us a false perception that those old days are gone and we've indeed overcome. Well, as we've seen during the last presidential election, the Republican Party were all too happy to employ a bevy of tricks to suppress the black and Hispanic vote. And for me, those recalcitrant and obstructionist Republican members of Congress are overjoyed at this decision by the Supreme Court, as well as what McCrory has hurled on our state. There is a serious organizing effort that needs to be employed to appeal literally to right thinking and rational thinking Americans. And I think it will help turn the tide back in our favor. It is time to add technocolor to those old civil rights film footage, because a new day in civil rights, in my judgment, have just begun. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station, as we fight to repeal the new photo ID law in North Carolina. I strongly urge each of you to take steps to prepare for 2016. We'll fight this atrocious law, but it's up to you to prepare for what may come. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.